Welcome to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney, heard right here on WFAS AM 1230 every Thursday night from 6 to 6:30 p.m. Each week, we bring you different guests who are experts in their field of special needs planning or elder law. And this week, we've got a very special guest, Roz Brilliant, who's the Executive Director of Disabled and Alone Life Services for the Handicapped. Welcome, Roz.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
We appreciate you coming on the show. Now, this is a long title, Disabled and Alone, Life Services for the Handicapped. Tell us how you got that name and what you guys do over there.
In 1988, the executive director of United Cerebral Palsy of New York City found that families were coming to him and articulating a new need. They were concerned about who was going to look after their children when they were gone. So they turned to him because he was someone they could trust. He identified this new need and decided to set up a nonprofit organization to address the new problem. Persons with disabilities are outliving their families. Now, we've all benefited from modern medicine, new technologies, early interventions, and other improved therapies. So persons with disabilities are now living normal lifespans, and their families are outliving them and facing a new problem. Who's going to be there for my child when I'm gone?
So you've only been around for less than 20 years.
Yes, 18 years, yes.
And the name, it's a long name for an organization. Was it ever called anything else?
Yeah, it was called Life Services for the Handicapped. But because we're a charitable organization and we needed to raise funds, we felt we needed more description, we added the Disabled and Alone.
So you're not-for-profit?
We're a not-for-profit. We are a national not-for-profit 501c3 charitable organization.
And do you receive any government funding?
No government funding. Our program is funded by the families we serve.
So do you have any fundraising events?
Yes, we do. We have an annual mail appeal. We have an annual luncheon. And we certainly always welcome donations.
And, of course, they're tax-deductible.
And they are tax-deductible, yes.
Okay, so for our listeners who may or may not be familiar with your organization, and one of our goals is tonight to make sure they become familiar with it, because I know that we feel you provide a very important service. Tell us about some of the types of services that you provide.
Well, when you raise a child with a disability, and for those parents out there who have a child, they know that you become a very passionate advocate for your children. You learn that you have to fight for your children when it comes to health care, appropriate education, services, housing, and you become a better advocate as your child gets older. Our program is based on the belief that planning and advocacy are the key to a good future life for persons with disabilities. So families are faced with new questions now that they're outliving their children, who will be there for their children when they're gone. So we have three parts to our program. The first part is the planning part. We work with families to record the information about the person with a disability so that we have an encyclopedia of information for future caregivers. And it's in this journal that families record their children's preferences and dislikes, successes and failures, people in their lives, treatments, and their doctors, lawyers, social workers, clergymen, anyone that we might need to connect with after the family is gone.
And the parent does this?
The parent does it with the help of someone from our organization called a personal advocate.
Okay, so the process, phase one, starts while caregiver or parent is alive and child is living at home with the parent.
Either child living at home or child living in a group home or child living independently. But it's a parent who's very involved in the life of their child and wants to make sure that what they're doing for their children will continue when they can't do it anymore. So that's what we do. We get instructions from the families in this journal, and we carry out their instructions when they're no longer able to do it.
So they actually write down, my child likes to sleep on his stomach or likes a certain pillow?
Absolutely. Or my child likes a nightlight on at night, or my child is allergic to yellow die, or my child can't handle loud noises, or my child sleeps on three pillows and the door is open. Things that a family knows, that nobody else knows, but that will die when the parents are gone.
And do you guys look at this journal while the parent's alive, or do you first open it up after the parent is deceased?
We look at it immediately, and we ask the parents to update it at least a minimum of every 2 years, generally every 1 year.
All right, so that's phase one.
It's the blueprint for the future.
Okay, what happens after phase one? What happens next?
The rest is up to the families, but when they decide that they are ready for us to step in, then we will carry out their plan. And they fund our program through the use of a special needs trust. Families have the choice of going to an attorney and setting up their own special needs trust and naming their own trustee, or working within our organization and using the Life Services third-party funded trust for people with disabilities, also known as a pooled special needs trust run by a nonprofit organization. When they fund the trust, and we will make recommendations on how much is needed to carry out their plan, which we learn about when they're doing the planning, then we will begin to do what they do. If they are alive and well and can observe what we do and advise us, that's even better. And if they can help their child adjust to life with our personal advocate in their lives, then that just makes it a lot easier for the person with the disability.
And who's the trustee of this trust?
The trustees are three people from our organization, two family members and two attorneys, but it's three people.
And there are contingency plans in place in case these people pass away?
We have a strategic plan for the organization that's been established by the board of directors. Nonprofit organizations are governed by a board of directors, and our board of directors has a number of very competent, well-respected people, people who head organizations like the Salvation Army, Goodwill Industries, and they have taken on the role of board of director, and they are legally responsible for the governance of this organization.
And these people professionally invest these funds?
We have two professional managers. We have some of our funds with Mutual of America and some of our funds with Legg Mason at this time.
So the money is invested and accumulates and then is dispersed as necessary.
Correct. And if it's restricted, it's kept in a separate account because they're restricted funds that can only be used for the benefit of their child with a disability.
Is that how most people do it?
Well, I don't know how others do it. That's how we do it.
That's how you guys do it.
Yeah, that's how we do it.
Okay,
right?
So each person who contributes to this trust, whatever money they contribute, they can rest assured will be spent on their child.
Correct.
And then what happens if they don't use up all the money when the child passes away?
Generally, they don't use up all the money because we try to use the interest on the money to take care of the child. Most of our members get government benefits. And so the money is used for the extras in life, the little things that aren't covered, the things that aren't covered by Social Security and Medicaid. And so,
Well, how do you in other words, after the child passes away and there's money left over, who gets it?
Okay, we ask 50% of the money to come to us, and the other 50% can be designated for anyone that the family wishes. Families, when they join our pool trust, fill out a sponsor agreement, and in the sponsor agreement, they agree to leave 50% to us, and then they tell us where to they want to leave the other 50%, or sometimes people leave it all to us.
And then that money is used to help some of the other kids?
For the future.
And you guys would decide how that money is dispersed?
Absolutely. We have families who cannot afford to fund the trust while they're alive, so they've purchased life insurance, which will fund the trust upon their death. These are families that can't afford to pay for our services, so our charitable funds will cover our connection with their children while they are alive, with the understanding that upon their death, their life insurance policy will fund the trust. And we will use the funds then in the trust to look after their children.
Now, you mentioned most of your clientele is on Medicaid or government benefits. I take it that these trusts, once they're funded, either with life insurance or from the proceeds of somebody's estate, that the money in that trust doesn't disqualify the person for Medicaid, does it?
Right. A properly executed special needs trust will not jeopardize any of their government benefits.
So it's perfectly legal to have any amount of money in one of these trusts and still be able to qualify for the Medicaid?
Correct.
Okay, this is Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're talking with Roz Brilliant, the Executive Director of Disabled and Alone Life Services for the Handicapped, And we'll be right back after this short message.
Sooner or later.